So let us move to tournament preps. Because how many tournaments have you done now, Omar?
Okay, so now I've signed up for like a gajillion, but I've done three. And it's because of the three that I didn't get to do. Chicago Open I signed up for, didn't get to do it because of work. The Vegas Open, I didn't get to do it because of Omicron.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there was one I was signed up for, Turkey Bowl and work, and I didn't get to do that. And that would have been in November. So there's three that I was prepping for that I didn't get to do. And there were three that were sort of like the three I got to do were kind of last minute. I think I'm gonna sign up for this and just go. So, you know, that's something, you know, interesting, you know, as well. But to that end, when you talk about prep, I'm a big believer in continue. If you're locked in, you never have to get up for a tournament because you're constantly training.
Yeah.
So I train as though I always have one.
I feel similarly. We'll go into that in a second. I've had a very similar tournament experience, though, as you've had. My last big tournament was over the summer. And I think there were three big tournaments since then that I like had a hotel for and was like ready to go to. Last second, some family emergency comes up. Can't do it. The one I did get to do, I only got to do two of the 3 days, and I had to miss two of those rounds even because my family needed me.
Yeah.
And I do get to play every week, but it's just a game 55. And so it's not quite that
it's
same
not the tournament
game.
Pressure. Yeah.
Game. So yeah, I've gone to a couple tournaments since I've come back, but there's been more tournaments I've signed up for and haven't been able to go to, which I think is something if you're out there and like it happens once, don't take that as like a sign from the gods that you shouldn't go to tournaments at all. That's just called life. Like life happens. Life will get in the way. And I really like what you said about like being always ready. Cause I hear this. People are always like, what should I do to prep for this tournament? Should I do this? Should I do that? And I'm always like, I'm always doing stuff. Like I don't like, even though I have a tournament in a week, I haven't changed anything about my approach. Mm-hmm. I've just kept doing what I do.
That's it.
Do I want to make sure, like, if I haven't looked at my opening lines for a month, I'm going to brush back up on them, but that doesn't happen. I'm always sort of looking at them. I don't even know if I'll look at them before the tournament. Probably the morning of, I'll have a momentary panic and go, oh God, I haven't looked at my lines in like a week. And then I'll look at them real quick and be like, okay, whatever. Why was I doing that? My lines are not like,
you'll get there and they won't even play.
I have to memorize 28 moves. Yeah. I just play good moves.
Guarantee you they're going to play something that gets you out of prep instantly.
That's the biggest thing to remember. So all right, so I guess let's talk about let's start by talking about pre-tournament. What are some pre-tournament tips you have for anyone who's like, I'm thinking about going to a tournament, I don't know, am I good enough, am I ready? What are sort of your pre-tournament tips?
So the first one I would say is you have to decide what type of learning. Well, first of all, let me step it back. You are not going to win.
Okay.
That is number one. Unless you are just a prodigy, unless you are in the 1%, you're not going to win. So don't even have that as something that's in your mind. I'm going to win this time. No, you're not. You're not going to win. You know, and if you're the person that wins, you are the 1%. Everyone else listening to this, you're not winning. So get that out of your mind. Don't even like think about that. So once you say, once you know, okay, I'm just going and I'm not going to win, well, then what do I want to take away from this? So that once you, and it's going to be, it's, I had somebody say to me, you know, you're not going to win. So the thing that you want to take away is the education and the experience of, you know, what can I take away from these losses that I'm going to experience, or maybe the one or two wins that I have, or the draws that I happen to take, you know, take as well. So to that end, if you know you're not going to win, well, then shoot, man, I would say when you start looking at the sections, which types of players do you want to learn from? Do you want to, you know, because sometimes like people will play it safe and they say, all right, I'm going to go into the, you know, section that is closest to what my online rating is or what my rating was before I stopped playing or whatever it is, you know, in that space. I would say it's almost better to go into a rating that's a level higher than where you are, because you're going to get better games. You know, you're going to get players that are going to challenge you in ways. And because you're taking notation, you get five or seven, in some cases, nine games where stronger players are going to just beat you up. And I don't care if you go 0-9, 0-5, it doesn't matter. Just play your best and get the notation. Make sure your notation is right after each game, because that's really what you're paying for. It's you get a three-day education from top players, or players that are, you know, significantly better or stronger than you, and you're going to grow as a result of spending that time with the, you know, basically it's like getting a chess lesson for an hour or two from nine different people. That's what you're paying for. So if you have that mindset, then it becomes, okay, well, what section do I want to learn in? What level do I want to learn in? Go back to my coaches or my friends or my club and say, somebody walk through these games with me when you go through your analysis. That to me would be the next, you know, phase of that. But get in your mind, all right, I know I'm not winning. So that determines what section do I want to choose. And then after that, it becomes really more around, I would say, time controls. Now, depending on the tournament that you're getting ready to play, if you're doing a three-day, and again, I'm just basing this on my experience, the three-day, you're going to have a game the first, like a Friday night. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's not. It's if you want a longer game, you know, depending on the time controls, they tend to, tournament directors will squeeze a bunch of folks in on the next 2 days at shorter time controls. So you might be the type of person that says, I like to get to wherever I'm getting to, get settled into my hotel, go downstairs to wherever the room is where we're going to play. It's a little empty. I'm comfortable. I walk in, I play whoever my first opponent is. I get that first game out of the way. If you're lower rated, you're going to be facing somebody who's higher in that section. And so you might get a chance to kind of knock them out because the pressure is more so on them. And if you lose, so what, right? So because you weren't expecting to beat them anyway.
Yeah.
You get to the next day, you're going to be, you know, positioned with someone who also lost a game already or hasn't played a game yet. Chances are they're going to put you with somebody who's lost one or won one. And so now you're in a section where with, you know, people who have similar strength, you know, to you. And then but you'll play somebody that's your time control. The nice thing about that is doesn't change. And they probably, so you won't have played anybody that has played yet, because if the people who are only doing like a 2 day haven't played any games yet, they'll bundle all of them together because they're showing up on that Saturday.
Yeah.
So I think it just depends on what you want to do. If you're the type of person that says, I don't mind playing a shorter game for my first two rounds and then having to change my clock going into the Sunday games, where it's going to be, now that we've kind of eliminated, you know, the fact that everybody's gotten enough, the same amount of games in, if you're a 2 day person, you're going to play three games on that Saturday. And then by the time Sunday, everybody's back to the same time control. You should be, you know, if you're that type of person, you'll be fine. Yeah, I can do three games in a day as opposed to just the two. Some people like to just have that, you know, immediate, I'm gonna turn right around and play another one. Me, over the board, not so much. I need 3 hours to get over, especially if you drop two in a row.
Yeah.
I need the time to cry, to quit chess, to get, then say, wait, I'm not really quitting, get back in and say, all right, what are you made of? Stop crying, get back out there to get to that third game that hopefully you don't drop. And typically for me, when I have five day, you know, game tournaments that go over 3 days, I'll drop two, win one, drop two. That's usually how it goes. Although I've had some where drop two, drew two, won the last one. That was one experience. But what you want to, I think it's those types of pre-tournament decisions of, do I want to change my clock? Do I sign up for two versus three? Do I want a game in the evening? Those types of things become more your setup, because you're not going in with the mindset of, I'm going to win and win this money. It's a, I'm going to go and I'm paying for an education from higher, you know, stronger players that I'm going to then take and analyze with my coaches so that my game improves.
Yeah. To jump on that real quick. Yeah. I think that's so important, of sort of knowing yourself. Like, for some people, maybe they're better in faster time control. So they're like, ooh, I can get a couple faster time controls to get comfortable to the tournament environment before sliding into a long game. For myself, I'm more like you. Maybe it's age. It's like, I don't want to play like four games in a day. Are you kidding? Yeah. Two is plenty. I'm going to give everything I have, no matter what the time control is. So I stick to the two. And like a good example is I'm going to the North American Open, a week from now.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you see me there, say hi. I'm not a celebrity. You don't need to worry. You're not bugging me. I know nobody there. It's just going to be me and you saying hi to me. I'll be thrilled. But for me, I take a bye. I can't be there for the first round. So instead of doing the piles of games on day two, I just said, you know what? I'm going to sign up for the whole thing and I'll just take a bye for that round. I can't be there. And now I still only get two a day rather than feeling like, well, I flew all the way to Vegas. I have to play literally every game offer.
Right.
You got to know yourself, right? Because maybe you're the kind of person who's like five games a day. I'm just getting warmed up. Like you, Omar, I could see you playing 10. You'd be like, bring it. I do that every day anyway. I don't do that. I play like one game a day. So even playing two for me will be a step up. So I know myself, I'm not going to sign up for one of those sections where I play piles of games. I think also bouncing on to kind of what you were talking about a little bit, I think there's this thing of like, my biggest advice for pre-tournament is like, just do it. Just sign up.
Yes.
Like, I think there's this thing that people have in their head like, well, I got to reach this rating online before I can do it. I have holes in my opening prep. I've got bad news. You're always going to have
holes. Yes.
It's just how it works. You're never going to be like, all right, I'm ready. I'm ready. I will not lose. And you're right. Especially if you have only played 2D and you go to your first 3D tournament, even if you play like you're way underrated, you are probably going to lose a lot of games. You're going to lose at least one game because like a pawn was hiding behind a queen and you didn't see it. And you're just going to be like, wait, what? Because it's just such a different experience. It's a different
beast. Yes. Yes.
All right. You nailed it. My last thing for pre-tournament prep is practice with a 3D board. You can solve puzzles on your board. You can play some games where you set up a board. You play a game online. You'll do worse. You'll get in time trouble. You may lose that game. Who cares? It was just prep training.
Yes.
Your over the board game. So like, don't go in never having seen a 3D chess board. Don't do that. It's too hard.
Too hard.
Facts. Okay. Should we move on to during the tournament advice?
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
What's one thing you would suggest during the tournament? And we'll kind of go back and forth.
So it's being intentional. And when the game starts, well, first of all, I'd say this, know how to set your clock. I have seen too many people show up at these tournaments and not know how their clock works.
Yeah.
And you will see them sitting there with directors right before, like, you know, the games are going to start in like 3 minutes and they are scrambling, trying to, you know, panicking. And I'm thinking, how much time is being and energy is being devoted to this thing that has the smallest amount to do with,
right,
you know, what's actually going on. And it kind of flies in the face. Yeah. It's stress. But what's interesting is because you and I've talked about this before where I'm like, be first to the table so you can use your set. You know, I've seen in my last tournament, the young lady who won my section had the nicest chess pieces I've ever seen. I'm thinking it's probably some House of Staunton.
Yeah.
Like these things, they were a gift to her. I guarantee you they, at minimum, they were like $2,000-$3,000 for these pieces. They were that nice.
Did she bring them to tournaments?
And she brought them to tournaments. Like
some
she set up.
This kid is blowing his nose on him and stuff.
Yeah. I think she couldn't have been more than like 16. And so it was definitely a gift to her. She ended up winning the whole section. So I'm like, okay, that's a gift that makes sense.
Yeah.
But they were exquisite. They were beautiful to the point where, you know, I don't even mind that I'm losing because I'm like, wow, these, you know, to the point where I go to her after the loss. I was like, where'd you get these chess pieces? Like, and she's like, this is how I know they were a gift. She's like, oh no, they were given to me. And I'm like, you know, it was one of those things where she would get to the table first and nobody was mad. Cause it's like, oh wait, this is way better than what I brought.
Oh yeah.
You know, I got these plastic ones or I got, you know, it's not that mine are bad, but they're not these, they're not House of Staunton. Right. So, but when you get to the table first so that you can use your chess pieces in your set, but then you don't know how your clock works. Mm. You set yourself up to be stressed out. So it's a get a simple clock that you know how to change the time controls on the fly. You know, practice that before you go.
Yep.
So that you have it, or just set it up before you go. Like that, if you're signed up for a tournament, you're going to see what the time controls are.
Yep.
Right away, get in the habit of setting your clock and knowing what. And I think there's some clocks where the instructions are on the bottom of it.
Mm.
You know, and I learned that. I've had this clock for 3 tournaments. Just happened to turn it over. I'm like, wait a minute, this has been here all this time. This is where, you know, because I'm trying to Google it for the type of clock, and so it's right there on the clock. It's like literally on the base of it is the instructions on how to do 5-second delay, all the different things that were coming up. And I said, man, I'll be darned, man. This thing has been sitting here in front of my hiding plain sight all along. So know your tools.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want to have something to drink, some water, what have you.
We're gonna go one at a time because I want to say something about that. That's such a good point.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I always set my clock ahead of time and there's no stress and everything's fine. But my daughter recently played in a tournament and the clock completely messed with her because it was this thing where like we didn't actually really know what the time control was going to be. We got there. I thought I set it up right. It's my clock. I know how to set it up.
Yeah.
But there was something that I didn't realize it was on hours and not minutes. And so I set it up for 30 minutes for her. Turns out it was 30 hours. And so it was a problem and the TO had to come over and the next round. He, quote, fixed it, but it was still on hours. So she was stressed. So, like, every round she was stressed. And, like,
you
could tell it was, like, pulling away from her chest. And she ended up losing every single round where the clock was an issue. And finally, the last round, I showed her. We played some practice. She went in stress-free and then had no problems winning. And so I felt so bad, right? Because it was like, I'm sabotaging her. Because I'm screwing up the clock I supposedly know how to set. And I've gone to millions of tournaments. So what great advice, you know, learn how to use your clock.
Learn your equipment, man. It's a, you know, or just kind of roll up to the table and let your opponent set everything up. If you don't mind playing with plastic, you know, which I personally don't, I don't love that. But what I found is that most players, if you get there and you say you're first to the table and they have, you know, everything as well.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to set your clock before the game, you can say, hey, can we use your clock? Because I don't know how to set this up. Most people are going to be cool about that. If you would rather, I've also seen people say, are you good with us using my set? You know, if you don't already have it set up, or, you know, you can ask. It's just it's a courtesy thing, but it's a, that's a big piece. And what you're really doing is, to your point, you're eliminating an area that will cause you stress and distract you from the purpose of what you're doing to sit there. And that's to play chess. The other thing I would say, can we move on from that equipment one?
Let's go on to the next one. Yeah.
The other thing I would say is notation, which is super, super critical because again, you're not going to win. So you've got to have good notation so that you can go back and get what you paid for, which is the education. What I have found, depending on what level section you are in, if you're in my sections, people are generally so nervous that they get notation wrong. The more tournaments that you play, the more comfortable you're going to be with doing notation. But one of the big things that I noticed was that I got too fancy going in for my first one. I bought like a book and I'm going to put all my notation, you know, in the same book and so forth, when they're handing you sheets when you walk up, right? So I don't bring that book anymore. I will go back and I'll enter them in after based from the sheets, because what I found is you're going to want to put them in an online database anyway.
Right.
You know, and so typically what I'll do is after the game, I'll go to my computer and I'll open up, I'll do a board editor, you know, either in Lee Chess or, you know, I'm going to enter them into a study and you make all the moves and then you can drop that, you know, that game into a study, send it to your coach and say, hey, here's what happened. The coaches will look at it, they'll run through it real quick and say, I noticed this, 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 and this. Because I'm talking with them during the course of the tournament. And each game that you enter in, they're taking a look and saying, watch out for this. You played well here. You use all your time. You know, you're in constant communication. If your coaches are good, they're going to be talking to you throughout your
the
tournament.
The difference, though, Omar, is people like you. I don't know how much people like me. We've got a difference here.
I think they love you, man. I think they absolutely love you. And so somebody will talk. Look, man, I'll talk to you and say, this is what I noticed. Don't do this.
I'm going to send you my games in between rounds.
Send them to me, man. I 100% will look at it.
Take a look at this.
I'll tell you, again, I don't know what it'll be, but I'll tell you it'll be any good. But I'll tell you something. You know, you will not be alone at the North American Open.
Good.
So I think if you, again, you don't want to have a ton of paperwork, anything that's going to distract you from the point, you know, of this is something that you want to eliminate.
Yeah.
And I would say then with as far as your notation goes, you want to take a breath after each move. And this is something that I think most people don't do. They're so quick to want to write things down. And you've got, in most cases, you've got over an hour, especially if you've got increments, you know, that you're dealing with. You've got a minute to stop, take a breath, and really look at what your opponent just played. 1-e-4. Let me take a minute.
Yeah.
Look at that. All right. I have been so nervous about writing notation. And this was in my last tournament. And this is how it's just the weirdest thing. I noticed in my second game that I had been writing all of the notation for my opponent's moves and my moves in one column.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so I'm writing them down, but I'm like, oh gosh, these aren't all moves. Yeah. These aren't all White's moves.
Yeah.
I didn't put anything in the side for Black. It's like, what am I doing? So I had to get a new sheet and rewrite everything out. And what I learned in that moment was there was plenty of time to do that. Because I discovered it early enough, like move 5. And that's how long it went.
Yeah.
And I said, well, let me go back. And so had time to fix all of that, kind of take a breath, and then make the next move, get rid of that other piece of paper. And so I said, man, you have time to take a breather, look at every single move, confirm. The other thing that it does for you is you've got to do your assessment of each move anyway to say, well, and this is something that one of my coaches gave me that's a nugget that I've been trying to apply going forward is if your opponent had an additional move, if they had two moves, what do you think their second move, you know, would be? So they get one move and then they get a move right after that because it helps you sort of formulate your strategy in terms of what you would want to play. But that also helps in that if you take that breath to write down, you know, what it is that to make sure that what they did is what you wrote, that becomes super valuable because it also helps you look at what the position is, you know, offering you, you know, what the features of the position are. And so you're thinking strategically by slowing yourself down, taking sort of like, I'd say the first 15 moves or so, taking a minute per move, because once you kind of get into that rhythm of making sure that what you wrote was correct, you're also sort of psychologically getting yourself to a space of calm and peace. And by the time you're into 15 or higher, you're in the flow of the game. You know, you're probably, I don't know, you're at least 15, maybe 20 minutes in to what's going to be, you know, an hour plus, you know, game. And now you're in the zone. You've made enough moves by 15 that there's been some critical moments and some time to really get into a think tank and to look at some things. And you're calm. You're in a rhythm and you're in flow. And I think that's what you want to do that game by game, so that you it's this calming. You know, Bruno tells me get up and go open a window, and I'm like, well, they don't have those necessarily in the banquet halls that we're playing in. But I get what she means. Another thing I'd say, man, is stand up. If you're more accustomed, if you're like me and you're more of a Queen's Gambit person that came into chess, so most of your experience was in 2D and not 3D, stand up and look over the board, because you're going to get sort of a 2D view if you're standing up and pieces can't hide per se. Like, I'd say every 5 moves or so, just get up.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of take a look down and make sure you see what you think you see. You know, and it's a way to sort of slow yourself down.
Yeah. A couple things to add on to that. Totally agree with all this. Notation is, in many ways, that's what you're there for, right? Is that notation. So I'd say proper etiquette you can ask for a picture of your opponent's notation.
Yes.
Like, you know, even if you think your notation is good, if it's your first couple tournaments, it's probably not. Like, it's not. I have games where I've, like, from 20 years ago that are basically lost games because the notation is so bad. And I'm like, I don't know what I actually did here. I can only guess. So, yeah, it's a good idea. The other thing is, if you miss a move, this will happen. You'll get nervous. You'll get excited. You'll miss a move. You'll miss two moves. You'll miss three moves.
Mm.
And when that happens to my daughter, she's done. She stops writing. Don't do that. Keep writing. You can almost always reconstruct one or two moves that are missing. Just keep writing. It also means if you stop writing, you can't do things like claim a threefold repetition if you don't have proof of it. Like, like if you stop writing and suddenly your opponent sees you're going into a repetition that they don't want to go into, I don't know. Maybe they stop writing. And then suddenly you're like, okay, that's a draw. And they're like, what are you talking about? You bring the judge over. The judge goes, there's no record of this repetition. What are you talking about? I can't call a repetition you have no record of. So yeah, writing down is so important. And I love how you said, take your time. I think one of the hardest things for most newer players to tournaments is rushing and having that slow rhythm of like, your opponent moves, you pause, you look at the board, you slowly, methodically pick up your pen, you slowly write it, you carefully set it down, you tuck your hands once more, right? You don't have your hand hovering like above the board, just waiting for them to move. Just, you get a process, right? It becomes all part of the slowing down process to help you take that time, even in that moment where you're like, no, I calculated this. I calculated seven moves out. They go boom, I go bang, boom, bang, boom, bang, bang. No, that sounds good.
Yeah,
sounds great. Recalculate it, take your time, slow down. Okay, great advice, Omar. Anything else you would say sort of like during the tournament you want to recommend to people?
Yeah,
I heard you say for a second there before I cut you off earlier.
Oh, no. The that's the other thing I would say is make sure that, obviously make sure you eat.
Yeah.
Especially if you lose. At my last one, I dropped the first game the first night and I was kicking myself, but I played decently, but could have had a draw, but didn't, just didn't get what I wanted to get and didn't really get a chance for a postmortem. That particular opponent wasn't one who was like, I'm going to stick around and I'm going to reconstruct the game for you. Mm-hmm. It was, you got me for 2 seconds because I'm leaving.
Yep.
And she ended up winning the whole thing, my whole section, and wasn't one that was like, no, I'm not collabing with you on this. I'm here to take souls. And it was like, well, can you give me anything? Yeah. And I already took yours. So why do I need to explain to you? You were there. You saw how I took it.
Yep.
And the one thing she gave me was, wow, you played above your rating. So good for you. Still beat you, but you played above your rating. And this is why I think this was the critical moment. When you go back over the game, I would look at this. Mm-hmm. And then she went on about her way. And I'll take that because it was more than what I think she was even willing to give. She gave me some nuggets. Okay. The second game, I was winning and I didn't develop all the way and I blew it on like I didn't see it until it was too late. And so after that loss, I ended up connecting with Ian. And he encouraged me and was like, and by the 20 minutes talking to him after I'd reconstructed the game and entered into the database, I'm laughing. I'm like, I can't believe I lost like this. This is killing me. I was like, I was killing this dude, and I just fell apart. So we got done, and I had noticed that there was a Chick-fil-A around the corner, and so I go over to the Chick-fil-A. I get something to eat, and instantly you feel better, about it because you just had chicken, right? So it's. You go from losing to, man, I got some chicken. I feel good. I ate. It's a try to normalize as much as you can, especially if you lose, on that. But it that would be like in terms of food would be the biggest thing. The other thing I would say is maybe I'm shifting here a bit. So forgive me if I am. The biggest thing I would say for new players, and new players for tournaments, is that if you are prepping, if you are doing the things that you need to do, if you're that type of player who is doing their puzzles, doing their tactics work, getting courses and so forth. And you go into a section that makes sense for you and you're playing. What you are used to doing is losing and being down in material. This is typically, I would say, people who are coming in who are like of my peer group. And so you're used to being -1, -3, you know, what have you. Mm-hmm. You will get to an over the board tournament and you will find that more often than not, you are ahead because over the board tournament players play differently. They don't care as much about material as they do piece position and piece activity.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And it's I have lost most of the games where I was ahead. I can think of the 15 games I've played, I've been ahead in material, probably about 90% of them, which like it's, and yet I've only won twice. I've drawn, I say 3 times and I lost the rest of them. Right. Okay. And so,
interesting.
You know, when you look at that and it's like, well, wait a minute, how am I ahead in material, significantly ahead? I've been as much of a queen up and so forth in games.
Yeah.
How are you that ahead and you lose? You know, what's going on with that? Well, there's this thing that I'm realizing that when you're a new player, you don't know how to play with a lead. You don't this is something Bruna said to me. She said, you're so used to losing that when you're ahead, you don't know how to finish. You don't know what to do.
Interesting.
And I remember at first I was kind of like, well, that's not very nice, you know, but she's not wrong. You know, I had no idea, you know, what to do. And so learning how to win, you know, win the one game, you know, as they say, is something that's a learned skill. And so if you are ahead in material, start to get yourself in the mindset of, well, what do I do now? How do I close this out? I think there's the things that you can do in terms of preparation where you can set up positions and then play a game out versus the computer, but set up a position where you're ahead by a piece.
Yeah.
You know, and but set Stockfish up to a level that's one level higher than what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And see if you can maintain, you know, on this, because that's essentially going to simulate, you know, or set it up and then play somebody who's a stronger opponent, human opponent, and see how you fare against a player that's stronger than you, but they're down in material.
I think it's a really good point. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, that was my point. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's so great advice because I feel like people are just more resilient in person or online. You go down a queen, you're just going to hit the resign button. Like, exactly. Why am I playing? But if you drove to this tournament,
yes.
You spent all this money on a hotel, you're not just going to walk away. You only have 2 games today. What, I'm really just going to stop now? I'm only down a piece. I could still get you.
Yeah. And you will find that it's something different about, man. It's when it's pieces in your hand that it's devastating when you drop a queen or something like that you just didn't see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got nothing else to do. Where else am I going? I'm not resigning, you know, especially
way,
if you're
the Chick-fil-A, but I mean,
unless I'm just hungry, you know, I'm going out. I'm going to sit here. We're going to play this out because what else am I doing? And so, my one of my last games that I played in the last tournament I was in, I'm +1. And I remember I talked to the guy after the game. We did a postmortem, and I asked him about it. I said, "Man, I can't believe I lost this game because I had lost to this guy in my first tournament, and so he had circled back around, and this was a revenge game for me, and I lost this one." And so I'm talking to him afterwards. Very nice guy. I'm talking to him afterwards, and I'm going, "Where did I mess up?" And he was like, "Well," he said, "you started playing different after you were up a pawn." And he said, "I had resolved that. All right, that pawn's gone.
Right.
I'd already moved on from it."
Yeah.
He said, "But everything you did was to try and preserve your +1 advantage. You were trying to get down to an end game."
Right.
And he said, "And I respect that, but you stopped playing chess.
Yeah.
You started playing protect this pawn." He said, "It's a different game." And that, it was like, oh man, I didn't, but it makes sense. He's like a significantly better player than me.
Right.
But I had, you know, had played him tough each time I played him, but he won both games. And in each of those games that he beat me, I was ahead in both games in terms of material. And he's like, at some point, man, you got to not worry about, you know, your material advantage and look at your piece activity. And so that was definitely something that resonated and stuck with me, you know, when he said that. It's like, you know, don't forget that you're still playing chess and look at your pieces and say, all right, are they on the most optimal squares? Am I doing everything that I need to do to involve all of my pieces all of the time? You know, is there anything that I, the game that I lost, that second game where I had to call you and I was crying, was because I didn't develop all the way. And what was, what kills me about that game is that I realized it and then I went away from it. I need to, like, there's a bishop I hadn't moved. And I'm like, I need to move that bishop at some point.
Right.
And the downs, what also will kill you in some of these situations is we can't help but think on our opponent's time.
Mm-hmm.
While they're thinking, you're thinking about, well, what are they going to do? And if they do this, I'm going to do this. And what will happen is the thought will cross your mind. I mean, I need to move that bishop. Mm-hmm. If I don't, you know, I'm gonna, and you start thinking about other things and you start, you may see a pattern of moves and a strategy that you go, oh man, if they do this, I can do this and I can get them and I can trap that piece. And you get, and this is how I got ahead big in that game. I saw all these other moves and I made them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so far removed from, I need to move that bishop. It was so far removed from that, that that was what cost me. I never went back to it. And all it, I still, to this day, I had a chance to do it multiple times and didn't do it. And that was what cost me that game. So start to look at, like, all of those things that can bite you. Look at your, you know, those things positionally. And if you have a thought, if you're the type of player that's going to think on your opponent's time and you see something that is a weakness in your position, make sure that it's, you know, that you figure out, like, that's the first thing you address. Yeah. I would rather see you have a game. I'd rather you lose, you know, a strategic opportunity and win an end game because you developed and did all the things. Because what will happen is if you don't, you're going to go back to that game and look at it and go, if I had just done X, I probably could have won. And, you know, all that material that you gobble up doesn't matter if you lose, you know, in the end. There's like this one goal.
I'm also hearing from you another reason to play tournaments is that they stick with you. Like, I imagine there aren't many rapid games where you can be like, and then I had this bishop and I never developed it. And I thought about it. And here you are probably months after
months.
You played that game, but it sticks with you, right? Like,
it's a the classical
learn from that game.
I mean, classical games, there's no pain like classical loss pain.
Yeah.
None. It's a, and that goes back to what we talked about earlier in terms of volume, because the more volume you keep, it's like, all right, okay, I lost this. And, you know, I care less about that because I'm getting the reps. I'm getting this. When you sit down at a 3D board and you, like you said, and you drove and you booked a hotel and you did all those things, that, like, if, and this is the other thing, like, why I'm like, I wish I had a chess club, because I feel like I would do more of this. I would, that's where the discipline I'm trying to develop is going to have to come from. I'm gonna have to find somewhere where there are human beings getting together at a coffee shop with boards that I can play, because there's something about real chess that is so even more addictive, but disciplined, because you're not going to be able to get to play but so many of those games at a time, because it's just a different, just a different animal. I got a clock. I got a, you know, it's physical. I'm writing things down. Not doing any of this. I'm in my bed on my phone playing Blitz. All right. This is, it just doesn't lend itself to that. So to your point, it's different preparation, you know, to be able to do that, but there's no better thing. But yeah, you remember, like, I got 15 games. I can tell you, if you were to throw them up into a board editor, I could tell you instantly, oh, this was this game against this opponent and this is where I blew it. Yep. I guarantee you I could. You remember it move. You could almost reconstruct it from memory.
Yeah. It's so fascinating how that works. Coming back to your food situation.
Yeah.
Especially if you decide to play those, like, four games in a day, you should also bring food, because you'll get in spots where if your game goes long, you might not have a chance to run out for food. I always have, like, bagels and trail mix and kind bars in my bag. And it's just like, I'm hoping not to need them, but, you know, if my game goes 5 hours and the next round's getting aired, like, that might be lunch.
Yeah, dude, because you're, that's the other thing. Like, I'm not in position in terms of the sections that I'm in where a game is going to go longer than 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, they just don't. They'll go two, maybe, you know, at most two and some change. I think, yeah, I've had some get close to three, but never quite that much. But at your level, five is probably the standard,
right? Having faster games, and that's been great. I prefer like 3 hours. So I have, 2 hours to unwind, but I'm a little worried enrolling in the under 2100 section, playing slow positional openings. Like, that's kind of what I'm signing up for, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be. So, yeah, I think to your point, having a bag of bagels to kind of get you through, to carry you through, you'll get that energy boost, whatever, that you need to be able to last, to go. You got your water bottle, everything else that you're going to have, or are you just going to buy it when you're there?
I'll probably have a water. I might just use the cups of water. Tournaments always have cups of water.
Yeah, they always have that. You should be good. Okay.
Usually fine there. Since we're, well past our time, but, whatever. Let's switch to etiquette at the tournament and give just a couple piece of advice for, I think a lot of people are really freaked out about the do's and don'ts of chess tournaments, and that sort of keeps them away. Like, well, I don't really know how I'm supposed to act at a tournament, and I totally get that. So what's one piece of advice you would give as someone who's fairly new to tournaments? Like, what was the biggest thing going in that you were just not sure how you were supposed to act?
I would say, and this is based on the last tournament, turn your phone off.
There's two things
I would say. Turn your phone off. Don't have it on the table. I had a guy in my last game who had his phone on the table. It was face down, but it wasn't off. And he was getting fantasy football alerts. And he would just check his phone and he would put it down. Yeah. And I'm looking at this guy like, what are you doing? And every few seconds, dan-dan-dan, and you're like, are you serious right now? Is this, we doing this? And I did, I touched the queen and then took my hand off.
Yeah.
And went to move another piece. And the guy yells out during the tournament, like, you can't do that. And I'm like, well, you can't have your phone on the table either, sir. What are we doing? And so it's from an etiquette perspective, I would say turn your phone off.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is make sure, and this is, I've talked to some people about this, and I think it's not as, it's more known than I realized. I think I was just the one who was getting educated on it, but they were saying it at my last tournament like it was new, but apparently this has been a FIDE rule for some time. When you go to castle, they were saying make sure you touch the king first, and then move the rook, or do them at the same time, touching both pieces and do it. They said, because if you touch the rook first, you have to move the rook and you can't, they won't, they will not allow you necessarily to castle. So I would make sure that it's just something that I'm going to be in the habit as I play tournaments, going up to the director and saying, what's the rule for this, and make sure that I have that set. And even if it's something that I tend to bring up with opponents when we sit down and say, hey, when I castle, this is how I'm going to do it. You're aware of how I plan to do that, so that there's no, you're trying to eliminate any area where there could be, because you never know what somebody's energy is going to be, with it. I think there's I don't want to plant a seed that there's people that are, that don't have sportsmanship at the forefront, but just in the nature of everything that's happened in chess of late, when it comes to cheating and just, things I've heard from some friends who have done tournaments where there have been people that have, you make a blunder and they've got somebody standing nearby, one of their buddies, and they're high-fiving their buddy I didn't realize this was going on, but apparently it's a thing within the chess community with some folks where so much of your value is tethered to your ELO and your one loss record that people tend to forget that that's a human being sitting across from you who has had aspirations and goals and hopes and dreams about coming into this thing. And they spent money to travel and they booked the hotel too. You can be decent. It's a, you know, you don't have to be unkind. Kindness, you know, I'd hate to leave somebody with a memory of me high-fiving somebody standing nearby because I got a chess position. That's not the memory that I want walking away from a tournament. I would rather it be something where the game's over, we went into the Skittles room and spent more time bonding about, you know, the game and helping one another, because there's going to be a billion more tournaments, hopefully, that you're going to play. And so, you know, I would say the biggest etiquette thing I would say is just be a decent human being.
Yeah.
And just be kind, you know, to folks. Normalize being kind to people and being respectful. The other thing I would say is, man, if it's not your set, be willing to at least stay and help the person break down their set. That's just good etiquette, in my opinion, unless you just beat them and they don't want your
help. Yeah, that happens.
You know, then you can say, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and go. Yeah. But I would not just get up and leave. You lose one offer. In fact, if you beat them, it's more fun to help them clean up.
Sure.
Because then they got to keep looking at you. Like.
Yeah. Okay. A couple things to bounce off that. First, one of my favorite wins ever is I made a couple of mistakes against an 1800 and got in a terrible position. Just terrible. Mm. And I was clearly losing. And he brought three friends over. And they all stood around snickering about the position. And I was just like, that's fine. People are like that. I'm dead. You're right. You outplayed me. You want a snicker? I'm good with
it. Go for it. Yeah.
Three moves later, I skewered his queen to his king and beat him.
Oh.
And I was like, guess what? I'm not going to bring my friends over to snicker about your skewered queen. I'm just going to take it, write it down, and go home with my victory.
Yeah.
Oh,
I love it.
Yeah, that was great. And then the other thing, like with what happened with you, is a perfect example of something really important. If something weird is happening, get the judge. If a dude has his phone out and it's going off, don't even say anything to the person. You just go get the judge and go, hey, can you resolve this issue for me? Another thing to know is judges will not just intervene. So like there's been a number of weird things that have happened at tournaments I've been at. There's been a judge sitting right there. And someone's whispered to them, like, hey, why aren't you intervening? And he's like, I have to wait until they ask for my assistance. So if you think something fishy is going on, ask for help. I've had two wild situations. One, and this is another just etiquette thing. If someone gets there late, that's fine. Like, lateness is totally fine. As long as they're not past the time where they lose, they come in late, the clock's been started. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Don't panic about it. Don't fret about it. They may be prepping for you. They may have gotten coffee, whatever. But I had a dude come in like 25 minutes late and tried to bully me into resetting the clocks because when we started, I just hit the clock, but because I don't even remember this, you know, like he was white, I was supposed to hit his side first and I didn't.
Yeah.
And so he was like, did you hit my side first? I said, no. And he's like, well, then we got to reset the clocks. And I was like, no, that's not how that works. And he was like, no, it is. That's how it works. Those are the rules. And he was really aggressive. And I was just like, all right, stop the clock. Go get the judge. The judge is like, that is absolutely not the rule. Come on time if you don't want to lose 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So basically, if I had let him bully me, we would have been on an equal playing field. And he would have had his coffee and his preps, right?
Right.
So be careful about that. And my daughter had an even worse situation. Her very first tournament game ever, she checkmates a guy. He castles out of checkmate after already having moved his king twice, moved it back, then castled it, went in checkmate. And she's just looking at him and she's like, this is my first tournament game ever. I'm 7. He's like an 18-year-old. She called him old man. He must know rules I don't know. And then he went on to beat her. And I was like, wait, what? Why didn't you call the judge? And she's like, what's a judge? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Her properly to say weird happens, call the judge. So this is just the advice. Something weird is going on, you call the judge. You may be right, you may be wrong, it doesn't matter. No hard feelings. You call the judge to resolve the issue that was happening.
Well put, man. Well put.
Yeah, that was frustrating seeing my daughter.
Yeah, just I mean, especially she wins.
Yeah, but don't worry, she's in the top 100 of girls 7 and under. She's doing fine. She's doing
fine. She's good. Okay.
Good lesson. Other, Any last piece of etiquette advice you want to give out before we head out here?
I think the kindness piece is the big one. Yeah, that's the big one, man. You want to, I'd say, make yourself, if you're open to it, make yourself available for folks post game.
Okay.
You know, yeah, there's so much to be exchanged. You know, again, I'm all about taking somebody's soul and, you know, taking their heart out of their body and looking at it. I love that. But that's during the game.
Right.
After the game, it's about relationships. You're meeting people that if you're fortunate, these can become lifelong friendships, you know, that you can have. You're like you said, it's, especially if you're in an over the board tournament, you just never know. These communities tend to be very smaller than they look, you know, mm-hmm. at first crush.
Yeah.
You go to, like I said, I've already had one guy that I played twice,
yep.
you know, in two separate, you know, tournaments. And the thing I remember most about him is he will come looking for me. Come on, man, let's go to Skittles room and let's sit down. Let's reconstruct it. Here's what, you know, I know you played this. Let's look at this. Did you see this when I did this? That to me is invaluable. And this is a guy that's beaten me twice. But I don't really focus so much on the fact that he beat me twice. But I think about how after he won, he gave me the gift of his time. And it was worth it. I wouldn't change a thing about those. And it's because of his kindness and his etiquette that I had a very positive experience walking away from those games. And you have the opportunity to do the same thing if you're playing someone and you beat them. Yep. If you make yourself available to them, think about the investment that you can make in another person's, you know, experience and in their chess, that you're going to walk away feeling even better about, you know, your own experience because you gave. We're wired as givers. And so I would say, you know, be kind and be willing to give some of your time away to a person post game. I just think that it's worth it to look into that and to pursue that.
Yeah. Okay. Last question I have for you before we head out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of new people to tournaments are really worried about two issues. One being like, when should I resign? When am I obligated to resign? And then the other one is like, can I offer a draw? Are there rules, like unwritten rules
Great
about draw
question.
Offer? So like, yeah. what is your perspective on these two issues?
All right. So with resigning, it's interesting because I have one coach who, when I was in my game with the queen up, I won my opponent's queen. It's move 19. And one coach, Mile, was like, he should have resigned.
Mm.
This guy fought on, he won. But I'm like, I had no issue with it. But Miles' position was, this is a gentleman's game. Mm. You won his queen in under 20 moves. He was like, on me, he was like, you need to resign. If you lose, you drop your queen in 20 moves, don't you embarrass me, you resign. Okay. Right? Like that was his energy.
Okay.
And I don't have any issue with that. Right? So I would say this, if you are under 1500, why would you resign? Okay. It's your opponent, chances are they have just as many opportunities to blow it as you have, you know, in that. I would say north of 1500, you're not going to be in a position more often than not when you're 1600 plus where, you know, you're not going to be as want to drop a piece that early unless it's just, you're just better. So you're not going to do that as much. So if you find yourself in a position, I'd say north of that, that is not winnable and you know it. I think to me, it's kind of it really depends. But what I would do, I would look at my opponent based on that and say, listen, I'm going to resign unless you want to play it out because we both paid to be here.
Mm.
You know, I know I'm not going to win, but I would love the reps. I'd love the experience. I'd love, you know, this. You're going to beat me anyway. Do you want to finish it on the board or I can just resign right now? You know, and see what's up. I wouldn't have any issue asking an opponent that because what you've at least done is offered it to them. And who knows? They might still blow it, you know, and go, you know, and you manage to sneak one.
Yeah.
I think it's more about respecting their time. If you play on and don't do that, then it becomes sort of this etiquette thing of, you know, the question will ask itself, well, why didn't you just resign? You saw that it was lost. There'll be some instances where it's not even worth asking the question. And then I think you just extend your hand, you just shake their hand. But some of that is your own discernment in terms of looking at, in terms of when to resign. But again, under 1500, resign for what?
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. I'm with you on some of those and totally not with you on other parts.
What are you thinking? Yeah.
So I'm totally with you in the, like, if you're lower rated, don't resign. Like, yeah, you blundered a piece, but guess what? It's who blunders last, right? It's not who blunders first. Like, both of you are going to blunder several pieces. That's how low level chess works. That's totally fine. Keep playing on. The question for me then becomes, like, if you're dead lost, like it's queen, king versus king.
Yeah.
Are you playing on or more? Oh,
okay. Now in that case,
queen, three pawns.
No, you resign.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're wasting somebody's time at that point. I'd say,
and this is where we're different, because my view is it's up to you. You paid the money to be here. As long as you're not screwing around and taking like 20 minutes and being like, I don't know, do I want to move my king to this square or this square?
Right.
Like, I've never done that personally. When I get down that much, I resign. But I've had several, like, legit players. Like, I consider someone over 1700 to be pretty legit.
Yeah.
Like, I had king, three pawns against king. The king's completely on the other side of the board. Can't stop me from queening.
Yeah.
I queen the pawn, look at them, and they're like, yeah. And they just move the king. I'm like, we're doing this. And they make me come over and, you know, take 9 more moves to mate them. But they moved their king with a regular
within game. Reason. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't begrudge them. I was just kind of like, you know, this is your game to play. If you want to hope I'm going to stalemate you, you know, that's your business, right? Like, you've probably had one moment where that happened, and now you're like, I will always play for this. And some kids, their coaches and parents won't let them resign. They'll just tell them,
yeah,
you got to play it out. So you kind of have to be ready. Like, if your opponent doesn't resign when you think they should, my attitude has always been, instead of being annoyed and letting that sort of get in my head, I just go, it's your game, man. You do what you do.
I'll do
what I do. And I will just beat you from here, because we both know you've lost.
Yeah.
So that's my suggestion is
wisdom.
You should resign when you want, and don't expect a resignation back.
You have changed, or I should say solidified, a position with me on that I had, you know, I knew was probably formulating, but I love your position and your take on that so much that that's now my take. Yeah. Okay, like, you have shifted me. I am now, you're on your team relative to that. Yeah.
Interesting. I think draws is more challenging, because it's like,
yeah,
I've heard people say, like, don't offer a draw if you're the lower rated player.
Right.
And I don't really agree with that. I think if you offer a draw once, that's totally fine. You offer a draw, the higher rated player may give you a look. Be ready for that. Like, what? I'm the higher rated player. I'm clearly winning and you're offering me a draw. What are you even talking about? Of course, I'm not going to take that draw and move on. And then just know, like, you can see from their face, like, okay, all right, they do not think this is a draw position, and we're going to go. But don't keep offering a draw, right? They'll offer
right.
you. Once you've made that offer, it's in their head, and they will then counter offer you back if they think it's a draw. But let me tell you this. They will not offer it back if they think it's a draw. They're only going to offer it back if they're losing.
Facts.
So my suggestion would be, don't take many draws. If you're the lower rated player, do not take a draw from a higher rated player unless you're in, like, serious time crunch. It's going to be tempting to go like this. Oh my goodness. They're like 200 points higher rated than me. I had no business even being in this game. I'm going to gain 6 rating points from this. Yeah. All right. I'll take that draw. You should immediately be thinking, oh my goodness, my position is even better than I thought it was. If this person is offering me a draw here, no way I take that draw. I don't know. That's just been my thought on draws.
I'm 100 because you have nothing to lose, man.
I rarely take them.
Yeah, I've had 2 draws in my tournament experience. One was like, I had to fight a bear to get it. And this player was a 10-year-old girl, and she had me dead to rights. You know, what's interesting about that game was, I was ahead huge in material. She fought back, had a beautiful position, and I had to sacrifice a bunch of things and to get it to a place where we got to an end game and it looked drawish. Yeah. And I offered it to her and she took it. She was like, yeah, I'll take it. The second one, same tournament, game had gone on 3 hours. And I look back on that game and my coaches have gotten angry with me over that particular game because I could have won it. But I had, I take that back. The game with the 10-year-old happened after. This game happened before. I dropped two, and this was the third game. And I was like, I don't want to lose a third game in a row. Based looking at a position, I'm 3 hours in. I got leg cramps, and I'm like, I just want to go away.
Yeah,
and get up from the table. Yeah, and so I was like, yeah, I'm happy to take that on. But since looking at that game, all my coaches were like, you realize you could have done this, 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 and this, and you'd have won.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm with you in that. The game against the 10-year-old, I was happy to take the draw.
Yeah.
You know, because like, part of me is like, man, she probably could have, you know, I would have blundered that away. But that first one has me more in your camp of don't offer them, don't take them. It goes back to not being afraid to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
If you lose, so what?
Yep.
There will be more tournaments. You will be fine.
Yep.
You know, in that. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
I'll say the funniest draw experience I had was in a tournament. I was in this Tuesday night tournament. It was just a one game for the day. And we drove there, right? And so we're playing. We get to this end game. It is certainly draw-ish. But I was like, I like end games. I'm practicing end games right now. That's like my focus. And so he offers me a draw in a very draw-ish position. I turn it down very politely. And we play on for like another 30 minutes in a really fun, drawn-out end game. That's a draw. And it ends in a draw. And afterwards, he was a little bit hot with me, right? And he was like, hey, man, like, you really think I'm so bad I'm going to blunder that end game or something? Like, I'm a little bit offended. And then it was funny because we went in the Skittles room and I was like, well, just so you know, like, I'm working on end games right now. And I just thought it was fun. Like, I just wanted to play an end game and kind of like, I thought it would probably be a draw, but I wanted to test you in some spots. And all of a sudden he's smiling and he's like, oh, okay. All right. Like, I thought you were insulting me. So I don't know. It's just draw etiquette is so interesting there where like someone might be insulted, but again, like that's their problem, right? Like,
absolutely.
You got to just do your thing at a tournament. You drove to this place, you flew to this place. Do your thing.
What I love about that with what you just said, why I don't think it's insulting and why I'm in 100% agreement with you is your energy behind it isn't malicious. Your energy is I'm working on this and I want to practice this. And, you know, that's all that matters at the end of the day. Your spirit behind it was never malicious. It was educational. And there's nothing wrong with that. And like you said, it's to have the confidence to say, well, if he's got a problem with it, that's his problem because you paid money to be there. You are well within your right to play that out however you want to. And if he's got a beef with it, man, there's an easy way to solve that. It's beat you.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, man. If it's not draws, you'll find a way to win this in game.
Yeah.
Exactly. I got no problem with that.
And once it was clearly a draw, then I re-offered the draw. I was like, yeah, okay, now we've done all the maneuvering, and now it's just like clear we're going to be shuttling kings around. And we could do that for another 100 moves.
Yeah.
Well, I guess only 50, right? Because you got to move a pawn in there somewhere. But yeah, at that point, I was just like, okay, now it's a draw. And I offered him a draw. And I think that kind of turned him around. I think he thought, like, I was going to play forever. Like until the end of time, I would just keep going.
Right.
But yeah, so draws are a fascinating beast in your first tournament. I would almost just put them out of your head. Like,
oh, you know what, Kevin, I'd say this too, man, with draws, don't be afraid to draw.
Oh yeah.
I think there's this mindset, if it's your first one, that I've got to win.
Mm-hmm.
And no, you can draw. And in fact, I would say the better you get, you're probably going to draw more than you realize in this. So this is something that Bruna had to say to me, you know, where like, don't be afraid to have draw in your vocabulary when it comes to your tournament games.
Yep. That's such a great point. I had a draw just like that yesterday where it was like, I had a move with my king. My king had to be on one or two squares. If I moved it to another place, my position was substantially worse. I risked losing. My opponent had the same feeling. We just did the threefold repetition and called it a day.
Call it a day.
Put it in the computer, and the computer's like, yeah, that was the only move. Like, if you move the other spot, you lose. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, you're right. It's not all about winning or losing. It's great to win, but it's better to sort of hold than to just, like, make a move you know is wrong just because you don't want to draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a discipline. That's not easy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Omar, this is a long episode. This might be two episodes. I don't know. I'm trying to figure that one out. But I really appreciate you stopping by.
Oh, dude, my pleasure.
Catching up with you was amazing. You had such great tournament advice.
Thank you, man.
For anyone out there who's looking for more tournament advice, I'm actually working on a video right now that's going to be like called something like Your First Chess Tournament on my Dr. Skull YouTube channel.
Sweet. So
check that out. But man, Omar, what a great time it was catching up
with you, man.
We should do this every week. I should just cancel this podcast and make a new one called The Omar Experience. Yeah. Omar Experience would be the greatest podcast ever. Omar, where can people reach you if they want to talk to you more about, I don't know, addiction, obsession, your idea of just playing games till you drop? Where can people talk to you?
Right on Twitter, man, at Chess Von Doom. You know, and if you DM me, man, I always respond.
Okay. And what is your rating now as we leave? Are you like in the 1200s still on
1200s? Yeah, on chess.com. Okay. I think as of this morning, it was like 1224.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
What's your USCF these days?
Oh, man, that's like 844.
Mm.
It is dropped significantly. It started out, it was 971. And then I played two more tournaments and got beat up a lot. What's interesting is that I had a better showing in my second tournament and it still dipped.
Oh, that's so annoying.
Yeah, those are tough, you know, but I think it's because of the section I was in.
Yep.
You know, when you draw against people that are lower rated than you, it's gonna, but I mean, my rating is still provisional. Okay. So, you know, I've got 10 more games I need to play. And that's why I was like, okay, these next 10, I've got to get right.
Yeah.
Because these are the ones that are going to set the rating up for whatever it's going to be. My goal is for it to be when it's official, for it to at least be 1,000. That's my goal. You know, so I got to play well in these next 10 that I do.
Yeah. And I think this is a good stopping point is that oftentimes people are like, okay, I'm 1200chess.com. And if I'm playing in like an under 800 section, that means I guarantee to win because I'm 1200. Oh, and then they lose a lot of games and get really frustrated, right? Like, what's going on? My USCF rating is only 750. I thought it was a guarantee I was going to win this. And now they come away with a whole different attitude rather than just going in thinking like it's a learning opportunity. They went in thinking I'm cashing in on my glory. And that's not really how it works. It's very rare when you get to do that.
Yeah. Do not tether your worth to wins and losses. Either way, if you lose, you're not worth less. If you win, you're not worth more. It's education. You're playing to get better. The only person you're really competing against is that person staring at you, you know, on the other side of the mirror.
Yeah.
You want to be better than that dude today. That's it. You know, and I think if you can do that, whatever form of practice and study and training that takes on, whatever that looks like, that is what I would advise someone to pursue. If that means volume of games, if that means fewer games with analysis, if that means I'm going to read more books, you know, and take Chessable courses or do whatever it is I'm going to do, I would find that sweet spot for you yourself and then make sure that you do that. But it's more about the process than it is about the outcome. You don't control the outcome. You know, and that's the thing that I think can be so devastating to people is that they think, well, if I do all the things, then that's going to equal the outcome. Well, it is and it isn't. That outcome is going to come when it comes. And then it doesn't necessarily, it keeps its own schedule, not necessarily yours. And if you're tethering your worth, and I say this for men from failed example, having been someone who's done this way too much, if you tether your value to it, you will become precious about things that don't matter at the end of the day. You will be like, I'm not going to play because I just want to see the 1200 just sit there and just look pretty. And it'll be that person that doesn't care about it that's going to lap you. You know, over time. So
they're like, yeah, your 1200 does look pretty, but I'm 1400 now.
Exactly.
That could have been you.
It could have been you. Yep. Yes.
Yep. I hear you. All right, Omar, thanks so much.
My what pleasure, a great man. Conversation. Always.
This is going to have to be two episodes. It's just going. That's all right. That's perfect. Now you can be a four-time guest instead.
I love it. I love it. Yes.
All right, man. Thanks so much for coming by. For always all of you pleasure. Out there, go play your first tournament. I'm just going to say that as unequivocally as I can. You will have fun. It will be worth it. I know you're looking at, or you're listening and you're going, but I'm not ready. I'm not ready. You are ready. Don't worry. You're ready. You'll have a great time. Will you lose? Probably. But that's part of the process. Don't worry about it. Don't go in trying to be the champion. Just go have fun. All right. Well, I'll see you all next time. And I hope this is a great week for you all. Goodbye, everybody. Welcome back to episode 76 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we seek to not only highlight the highs and glories of ratings gain, but also dive into the plateaus and even worse, the pits of despair. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. And I want to thank Jay Tuttle, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, David Shriver, and Lindsay Newhall. I also want to thank our sponsor, Chessable. You can do anything with Chessable. I am currently prepping for a tournament. I'm using the Woodpecker method quite a bit. I'm going over my opening lines on there. I'm even doing some end game work there. Chessable has all your needs covered. They are amazing. I have been streaming quite a bit on Dr. Skull_Tiny Grimes. Feel free to check out those streams. And if you want to appear on the show, you can go to the Google form in the show notes. We all want to hear your story. And this week, much like last week, we're bringing on Omar for part two. Last week, we talked about sort of catching up on his journey, talking about his chess obsession, how he's been playing oodles of games of late. But today we're going to dive into sort of the nuts and bolts of going to your first tournament. And Omar is going to give us a whole bunch of ideas regarding his first tournament. And I'll be chipping in with thoughts about mine. I hope you enjoy the show.